The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going? Where do we come from? What are we? Where are we going?
Over the years, the Doctor's had many faces, but what will he look like in the next 50 years? Well, we've set up some little auditions, just for fun, to see if we can find a future star of Doctor Who.
I'm the Doctor, but probably not the one you're expecting.
Do you want a jelly, baby?
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
I will, Fez now. Fez's a cool.
I'm the Doctor, but probably not the one you're expecting.
I am definitely a madman in a box.
And on Zeke.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff.
Yeah, well, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
First, the polarity of the neutron flow. Have you heard that? Can you say that before?
I've reviewed the...
I just reverse the polarity of the neutron flow.
I reverse the polarity of the neutron flow.
You will become like us or you will be deleted.
I wear a fez now. Fez is a cool.
I wear a fez now. Fez is a cool.
It's cool. Others are cool.
Are you from another planet?
Yeah, I reverse the neutron of the neutron show.
I'm the Doctor's daughter, Alon Z.
Geronimo!
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 Alon Z.
How do you think your audition went?
Yep.
Good? Yep. Do you think you got the part? Well, who knows what the next 50 years will bring. But until then, how can people see more videos from the Doctor Who YouTube team?
Whoa. Subscribe!
When they made this particular hero, they didn't give him a gun.
They gave him a screwdriver to fix things. They didn't give him a tank or a warship or an X-wing. They gave him a call box from which he can call for help. And they didn't give him a superpower or a heat ray. They gave him an extra heart. That's from Stephen Moffat. He is a writer and producer, former producer, on Dr. Who. Everyone, my name is Nicole Reuser. I've been a Doctor Who fan for about 3 years now, just during the pandemic and binge watching, you know. I should explain very quickly. Doctor Who, the TV show, is divided into sort of three eras. It was to the 80s, then it went off air, the movie in 1996, and then there's what people call New Who, which restarted in 2005 in the long day. So far, I've mostly watched New Who. All my examples are from that. Classic Who, the 60s to the 80s, is still waiting for me, like an open box of chocolate, which is going to have some examples from that era later on. What I love about Doctor Who is that at the start of a lot of episodes, you don't know who the real monster is. Sometimes there really is someone harming the nice locals out of greed or malice. For example, in Aliens of London, there's a crime family that basically wants to melt the Earth down for scrap metal and sell it. Or in The Woman Who Fell to Earth, the new doctor and her new friends are battling a creature who is literally hunting humans for sport. Also, any episode with Dalek in the title, these little trash bin guys are going to show up and try to exterminate anyone who's not exactly like them. So yeah, sometimes the show is just straightforward, you know, shoo-shoo sort of sci-fi. But sometimes it turns out that the so-called nice locals are harming another creature who is lashing out in self-defense. My favorite example is episode 42, where they are harvesting a star for energy. It turned out to be the star itself is a living creature. So it starts falling down. Or the two-part episode, The Rebel Flesh and the Almost People, where these sort of human doppelgangers are created to work in very harsh, even deadly conditions. And the two-parter explores the ethics of, are these the same people? Are they separate people? Do they have the same rights as people? So very good, very compelling. Sometimes there is no real monster at all. It's just two parties with valid needs and concerns that have to come to some kind of compromise. Two of my favorite two-part stories, that there's so much drama that I had to use 2 hours to tell it, are about humans negotiating with another species that wants to live among them. The reptilian Silurians in The Hungry Earth and Cold Blood, or the Zygons in The Zygon Invasion, The Zygon Inversion. Maybe the so-called monster was actually trying to help us, it's just misunderstood. In The Forest of the Night is an episode where an indestructible forest pops up all over Earth overnight, like it says on the tin. And it turns out the forest is just here to create this kind of oxygen airbag to buffer the planet from an incoming solar flare. Or Demons of the Punjab, the so-called demons are actually aliens who used to work as assassins. The doctor knows this, so she doesn't trust them either, even though she knows about demons. But then when she finally gets to talk to them, she learns that a tragedy befell their planet, and since then they have changed their mission to one of compassion for those who die alone. And that episode, oh, it's right here, great one. Maybe all the strange happenings are the result of someone being misunderstood, lost, and afraid. In the two-parter, The Empty Child and The Doctor Dances, all is set right when a young single mother admits to her son who she really is. In Night Terrors, a couple who struggled with infertility unwittingly adopt a shape-shifting alien child whose childhood fears begin to warp reality. But all is set right, and his parents reassure him that he is still theirs and always will be, and they love him and there's nothing to be afraid of. Sometimes, not often, but every once in a while, the doctor doesn't get an answer. the famously creepy episode, Midnight. We have no idea what this thing is, except it can live in very harsh environments, it's invisible, it possesses people, turns them into perfect mimics, and then they turn on the people around them. And at this point, the doctor and everyone else in the train basically throws it out of an air hatch, along with the primary victim, unfortunately, to save the rest of their lives. We never find out what the thing actually was. Very creepy. Or in the episode Flatline, the doctor admits he doesn't know if these two-dimensional beings that are popping up, if they are killing people malevolently or if it's just an accident and trying to bring them into the world and they get crushed. But for the sake of Earth, he zaps them back to their own dimension. And after trying to and failing to communicate with them, he tells them that this is his job. He's the man who stops the monsters, and they're acting like monsters. Sometimes the doctor chooses the wrong answer, and it comes back to haunt them later. In The Waters of Mars, an astronaut captain challenges the doctor on his tendency to play God. Tragic result. Or in The Woman Who Lives, the doctor crosses paths with a young woman whose life he saved 7 centuries ago. And physically, she hasn't changed a bit, but mentally, she's pretty bitter about her immortality. So, she made a mistake there, and there's a whole half a series of plot lines, and she becomes a nemesis. The doctor is clever, but they don't know everything. They are far from perfect, and I use they because the doctor has been portrayed mostly by men, but we did have a woman in the part a few years ago. That's not the doctor in general. Anyway, they keep exploring, learning, and trying to help when they find others in trouble. And I love what this narrative says about the doctor, about life, and about us. A few years ago, I took an intro to Dungeons and Dragons. And I'm sure that things are different when you know the game and your fellow players really well, but in a basic class with strangers, Dungeons and Dragons is kind of love the bard's rules first and ask questions later. And I just could not get into it. I always wanted to move around the castle more. Maybe you could talk to the trolls. Who knows? Maybe they're not the monsters. Maybe you think they are. I figure around the same time, I've been watching Doctor Who. So, if this show could influence my Dungeons and Dragons playing style, these stories of a cosmic do-gooder, flawed but well-intentioned, ancient and haunted but still brave and kind, then perhaps the doctor can inspire my approach to everyday life too. We 21st century humans can't travel in time, apart from the solar march forward. We can barely travel in time. We accumulate decades of experience, not multiple centuries of the doctor. And we don't have sonic screwdrivers that can point and fix almost anything. But despite all of this, we can still strive to be the kind of person that the doctor strives to be. Humble, inquisitive, brave, and caring. And on that note, we have a brief clip from my favorite doctor of the ones I've watched so far. Twelfth Doctor, played by Peter Capaldi.
Every battle, every war, every invasion, from now on you decide the outcome. What's the matter, Mr. President? Don't you trust yourself?
Tell me, am I a good man?
Sir!
I see into your soul, Doctor. I see hatred!
I'm not a hero.
You are a good Dalek!
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really didn't know. I wasn't sure. You lose sight sometimes. Thank you! I am not a good man! I am not a bad man. I am not a hero. I'm definitely not a president. And no, I'm not an officer. You know what I am? I am an idiot with a box and a screwdriver. Passing through, helping out, learning. I don't need an army. I never have, because I've got them.
Always them.
Because love, it's not an emotion. Love is a promise. And he will never hurt her.
Good morning. The Doctor, Doctor Who is one character, but he was played by 14 different actors. The show started in 1963, and the first Doctor is William Hartnell. Now, he played it for about 3 years, and the show was a success. Then he started having medical problems, and he couldn't play the Doctor anymore. So what do you do? Stop the show? Well, they thought, well, let's have someone else play the Doctor. But they didn't want to get someone exactly the same. So what they do is, he is an alien from another planet, from Gallifrey. He's a scientist. And they have the ability, when at least for 13 times, when they die, they regenerate and come back into a fresh new person with a different personality, a different taste for clothes, etc. So this is the first one, William Hartnell. He was he played it sort of a professory type doctor. Then when he died, then he regenerated into Patrick Troughton. He was considered the cosmic hobo. He did a lot of funny things. He kind of acted stupid, but he was very smart, and that's how he tricked his enemies. Then he died when he was tired of playing the part. And the third Doctor was John Pertwee. They particularly wanted a James Bond type. Someone that was more into action, but he was also a scientist. And okay, now let's then when he did it for 4 years, then it passed on to the fourth Doctor, which is played by Tom Baker. He did it for 7 years, and he was considered the Bohemian Doctor. All right, after 7 years, he died and regenerated into Peter Davison, the fifth Doctor, and he played it, even though he's an alien, he played it like a human being. He was a very humane human doctor. Then following Colin Baker, the sixth Doctor, from that point on, each Doctor put their little twist on the character. I don't know exactly what they were going for each one, but they did a good job. So when he passed away, then regenerated in Sylvester McCoy, he did it for 2 years. He was the seventh Doctor. This is the eighth Doctor. He did a 2-hour TV movie, and he played the Doctor. Then there was the ninth Doctor. He did one season, Christopher Eccleston. After him, about 5 years, the 10th Doctor, David Tennant. Then Matt Smith, he was the 11th Doctor. And Peter Capaldi, the 12th. The 13th Doctor was Jodie Whittaker. And this Doctor didn't start yet. He's the next Doctor in line, the 15th Doctor, Nikuti Gatwa. Now, in our next clip, it just shows the 11th Doctor, Matt Smith, approaching an alien, talking to an alien, and you could see that their reference to his many past lives.
So this was a good idea, was it? They were leaving.
Leaving is good. Never coming back is better.
Come on, then. The Doctor will see you now.
You are not of this world.
No, but I've put a lot of work into it. I don't know. What do you think?
Is this world important?
Important? What's that mean, important? 6 billion people live here. Is that important? Here's a better question. Is this world a threat to the Atraxian? Well, come on, you're monitoring the whole planet. Is this world a threat?
No.
Are the peoples of this world guilty of any crime by the laws of the Atraxian?
No.
Okay. One more, just one. Is this world protected? So you're not the first doctor to come here. Oh, there have been so many. And what you've got to ask is, what happened to them? I'm a doctor. Basically, run.
Doctor Who didn't believe in using a weapon. He didn't believe in violence. But he did always carry a sonic screwdriver, which he used very creatively. It's a screwdriver, it's sonic, but he was able to make it do many different things for him. So here's some clips to show you some of the uses the doctor had put a sonic screwdriver to.
Morning, sir. Good morning. Any sign of a smoker yet? No, we're still searching for him.
Nasty business, then.
Yes. Still, you should be safe in there. I'm sure this Harry Slocum character won't have one of your funny gadgets.
Funny gadgets?
Traveled in a spacecraft called a TARDIS. That stands for time and relative dimensions in space. Basically, on the outside, it looks like an old-time 1940s, 1950s police phone box. It basically looks like a telephone booth painted blue. On the inside, it's a huge ship. The inside is on a different dimension from the outside, and there's a running gag that the TARDIS is bigger on the inside than on the outside.
It's bigger inside than out.
Yes. That's because the TARDIS is dimensionally transcendental.
What does that mean?
It means that it's bigger inside than out.
If you want to.
It will not affect this.
Affect it? Oh, it's a yo-yo. It's a game. I thought you were enjoying it.
Enjoying it? You said I had to keep it going up and down. I thought it was part of the magic.
Magic, really? Magic?
I know. There's no such thing as magic.
Exactly. To the rational mind, nothing is inexplicable. Only unexplained.
So, explain to me how this TARDIS is larger on the inside than the out.
All right, I'll show you. It's because insides and outsides are not in the same dimension. Which box is larger?
That one.
Now which is larger?
That one.
But it looks smaller.
Well, that's because it's further away.
Exactly. If you could keep that, exactly that distance away, and have it here, the large one would fit inside a small one.
That's silly.
That's transdimensional engineering, a key time law discovery.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I
noticed.
Look,
it's called the TARDIS. It can travel anywhere in time and space. And it's mine.
This. Look at this.
Go on, say it. Most people do.
on the outside.
Okay. That is a first.
Curious things about this piece is its wonderful afunctionalism.
Yes, I see what you mean. Divorced from its function and seen purely as a piece of art, its structure of line and color is curiously counterpointed by the redundant vestiges of its function.
And since it has no call to be here, the art lies in the fact that it is here.
Huge room inside. What's that about? Let me explain.
It's another dimension.
It's basically another dimension. What?
After what happened with Prisoner Zero, I've been reading up on all the latest scientific theories. FTL travel, parallel universes.
I like the bit when someone says it's bigger on the inside. I always look forward to that.
So, this...
All right, the title of this service is called, Is Doctor Who a UU? Well, we have seven principles and to Unitarian Universalism, and we're going to see if Doctor Who matches anything in the seven principles. We'll start with the last principle first, the seventh principle. Respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part.
The very beginning. The new start of a solar system. Outside, the atoms are rushing towards each other, fusing, coagulating, until minute little collections of matter are created. And so the process goes on and on until dust is formed. Dust then becomes solid entity, a new birth of a sun and its planets.
Hey, do you mind if I tell you a story, one you might not have heard? All the elements in your body were forged many, many millions of years ago in the heart of a faraway star that exploded and died. That explosion scattered those elements across the desolations of deep space. After so many millions of years, these elements came together to form new stars and new planets, and on it went. The elements came together and burst apart, forming shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings, until eventually they came together to make you. You are unique in the universe.
Now we'll go to the sixth principle. The goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all.
Come on, Shannon. Oh, I guess it's a surprise. Still, cut to the chase. Stay in here, look after Jackie.
Looking after my mum.
Well, you brought her.
I was kidnapped. Doctor, they've got guns.
And I haven't. Which makes me the better person, don't you think? They can shoot me dead, but the moral high ground is mine.
I know you're in there. There's only one entrance to that pavilion. Come out, Doctor. Surrender. We won't harm you.
Tell the bowmen to fire immediately they see the target. I want him destroyed.
Well, Doctor, are you coming out? You have my word as a graft. You will not be harmed.
In the forest, Master.
You just leave it to me, K-9. I know exactly what I'm doing.
Laura!
Wait, I wouldn't have
Carl, you can't self-destruct, and you know what that means. My ship goes, you all go with it.
You would not use such a device!
Fine. No scans, no nothing. One move and I'll destroy us all. You got that?
TARDIS, bang, bang, Daleks, boom!
Good boy. The
question is,
what do we do now?
Either you turn off your clever machine, or I'll blow you and your new paradigm into eternity.
And yourself! Occupational hazard.
Scan reveals nothing. TARDIS self-destruct device non-existent.
Alright. It's a jammy dodger, but I promise you.
Wonder where we are.
You mean you don't know?
Well, not precisely, no.
You mean you can't control this machine?
Well, of course I can control it. 9 times out of 10. Well. 7 times out of 10. 5 times. Look. Never mind, let's see where we are. You won't be there.
How do you know?
I never carry weapons. If people see you mean them no harm, they never hurt you. 9 times out of 10.
The fifth principle, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large.
Right. I'll set the coordinates for Gallifrey, shall I?
Why Gallifrey?
Well, that's where we're going, isn't it?
We have the power to do anything we like. Absolute power over every particle in the universe. Everything that has ever existed or ever will exist. As from this moment. Are you listening to me, Romana?
Yes, of course I'm listening.
If you're not listening, I can make you listen. Because I can do anything. As from this moment, there's no such thing as free will in the entire universe. There's only my will, because I possess the key to time.
Doctor, are you all right?
Well, of course I'm all right, but suppose I wasn't all right. Now, this thing makes me feel in such a way I'd be very worried if I felt like that about somebody else feeling like this about that. Do you understand?
Yes.
How do you understand?
That the sooner we hand this over to the White Guardian, the better.
My congratulations to you, Doctor. You performed your task with admirable dispatch. The universe has much to thank you for.
Well, it was a pleasure, sir. Wasn't it a pleasure, Romana?
Doctor?
Yeah?
That's not the president.
What's the president got to do with it?
I can change my form or shape at will, my dear child. I appear to you as the president, so as not to alarm you.
Just be careful who you're talking to.
Oh, sorry.
You have the key to time, Doctor.
Oh, I have indeed, sir. Do you like it?
Do I like it? Yes. Yes. I suppose you could say that I like it.
Yes. We're very proud of it, sir. Aren't we, Romana, proud of it?
What? Oh, yes, yes.
What happens now, sir? You said, if I remember our first conversation, that once it was assembled, it would stop the entire universe and enable you to restore the natural balances of good and evil throughout the whole of the universe.
That is correct, Doctor. So, will you release the key to me that I may do this?
Certainly, sir. Yes, certainly, of course. Key to time, I command you. Could I ask you something, sir?
Yes, Doctor.
It's just that, well, the key's already assembled, sir. I mean, couldn't you restore the balances now?
Yes, Doctor. But I must have the key for safekeeping. It is an awesomely powerful key.
Yes, and mustn't be allowed to fall into the wrong hands. I quite understand, sir, yes. Key to time, I command the... What about the sixth segment?
What about it, Doctor?
Oh, well, I mean, as you know, sir, the sixth segment was in fact a human being. And I mean, if the pieces are maintained in their present pattern, it means it should be in prison forever, sir.
Well, that is, of course, regrettable.
Very regrettable.
But with the fate of the universe at stake...
God, you can't be too careful. I quite understand. Key to time, I command that you stay exactly where you are.
Doctor, you have fully activated all the TARDIS's defenses.
We can't be too careful, can we? And it would be a terrible tragedy for the universe if it suddenly turned out that I was colorblind.
Doctor, release the key to me immediately.
Unable to distinguish between the White Guardian and the Black Guardian.
Doctor, what do you mean?
Look! Never have had such a callous disregard for human life.
Of course. Astra, the sixth segment, he would have dispersed it immediately.
Doctor, you shall die for this!
I think not. Remember, the key to time is still mine. Rage all you like.
I shall destroy you for this. I will disperse every part of your being to the furthest reaches of eternity.
Ah, well, I wish I could stay and watch you try, but you know how it is. Places to go, people to see, things to do, Romana.
Yes?
When I give the signal.
Yes?
Dematerialize. Now!
The fourth principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning.
You're happy to believe in something that's invisible, but if it's staring you in the face, nope, can't see it. There's a scientific explanation for that. You're thick.
You know, the very powerful and the very stupid have one thing in common. They don't alter their views to fit the facts. They alter the facts to fit the views. Which can be uncomfortable if you happen to be one of the facts that needs altering.
The third principle, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations.
Can I borrow your horse, please? It's official martial business.
He's called Joshua. It's from the Bible. It means the deliverer.
No, he isn't. What? That's because he's called Susan, and he wants you to respect his life choices.
Where are we?
Paris, 2010 AD, and this is the mighty Musée d'Orsay, home to many of the greatest paintings in history.
Now that's wonderful.
Ignore that. I've got something more important to show you.
Take all your chances while you can. Never know when they'll pass you by. Like a song the mathematician cannot solve. Like me, trying my hardest to.
Say so, but I just wondered, between you and me, in 100 words, where do you think Van Gogh rates in the history of art?
Well, big question, but to me, Van Gogh is the finest painter of all time. Certainly the most popular great painter of all time, the most beloved, his command of color the most magnificent. He transformed the pain of his tormented life into ecstatic beauty. Pain is easy to portray, but to use your passion and pain to portray the ecstasy and joy and magnificence of our world, no one had ever done it before. Perhaps no one ever will again. But to my mind, that strange, wild man who roamed the fields of Provence was not only the world's greatest artist, but also one of the greatest men who ever lived.
Vincent,
sorry.
I'm sorry, is it too much?
No, they are tears of joy.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Sorry about the beard.
the second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations.
It's amazing. I never actually met a proper ghost.
Moran was our friend.
The gods.
Oh. Oh, right, you are.
Very sorry for your loss. I'll do all I can to solve the death of your friend / family member / pet.
The first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person.
Nobody important.
Nobody important.
Blimey, that's amazing. Do you know, in 900 years of time and space, I've never met anyone who wasn't important.
Without that beast, my mills would rely on coal mines. And men die in coal mines all the time.
I referred it when you were alien.
And I was...
Well, that explained the lack of humanity. What makes you so sure that your life is worth more than those people out there on the ice? Is it the money? The accident of birth? Puts you inside the big fancy house?
I help move this country forward. I move this empire forward.
Human progress isn't measured by industry. It's measured by the value you place on a life. An unimportant life. A life without privilege. The boy who died on the river, that boy's value is your value. That's what defines an age. That's what defines a species.
Before we end this service, the doctor wants to say something.
One day, I shall come back. Yes, I shall come back. Until then, there must be no regrets, no tears, no anxieties. Just go forward in all your beliefs and prove to me that I am not mistaken in mine.
She packed my bags last night, pre-flight. 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then. I miss the earth so much, I miss my wife. It's lonely out in space on such a timeless flight. I don't understand. just my job 5 days a week. A rocket man, a rocket man. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time till touchdown brings me round again. Thank you.